I said, what you know about it?
It's the stew, baby.
Got the mise en place.
Young stew, baby.
And the room a lot.
Hello, hello. You're listening to The Stew. My name is Jason Stewart. This is my food podcast. Say hello, Andre Conaparo.
Hello.
We have one guest today, Javier Cabral. Cabral?
That was good.
Is that correct?
That's good. It's correct.
Do you roll the R when you say it?
I don't know. It's just like on TV or something, but you're good.
Okay. Javier, you have been a food writer, blogger for a long time, and now you are the West Coast editor of Vice Munchies.
Boom.
Is that correct?
Somehow, some way. Yeah, I'm still here.
Many bullets.
Somehow, some way. We'll get into that journey. Don't worry. So yeah, basically, you started writing a food blog a long time ago. Is that kind of what happened?
Yeah, man. That's exactly how it happened. You know, this is back in 2006. When, like, you know, you had to resort to, like, Chowhound and probably get ridiculed by someone for asking a simple, like, where should I celebrate my birthday? And you're like, oh, your thread has already been covered, like, 5 years ago. I mean, like, 5 months ago. Please go check this out.
Yeah, people love doing that on Chowhound.
It was Eaglelit and Chowhound. And, you know, food blogs weren't that many of them to begin with. And it was through Blogspot.
Yeah, that was kind of the very early days, the wild, wild west of food blogging. There wasn't a ton going on compared to now.
Yeah, so that was like 11 years ago, I think, right? No, two...
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Ten?
Yeah, nine, ten,
nine,
11.
Ten. Yeah. I failed algebra, and I dropped out of college. So, yeah.
That's okay. You're a literary man. So, why did you get into food blogging in the beginning? I mean, because you're not the stereotypical food blogger-looking kind of guy. You're like a punk rock bro.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, the bro thing is kind of funny because I just kind of accepted that I was a bro, like, recently.
Well, I didn't mean that in a negative way.
Yeah, no, I don't.
I mean, just like a dude.
Yeah.
Punk rock familia.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm from Orange County, so I use the word bro loose.
No, I know. But
you just came to grips that you're a bro recently?
Yeah, I did.
How so?
I just caught myself, I don't know, I always go to shows in Orange County too, and I use the word bro a lot, and I drink a lot, and I don't have a famous Stars and Straps or a truck, but maybe.
But you're closer to famous Stars and Straps than most people in the food community.
Yeah. It's true.
Okay, so
it gives you an angle.
So the way I started food blogging, weirdly enough, is that I used to live in East LA, and then I went to Garfield High School, which is, you know, super East LA high school.
Okay.
Where they shot like Stand and Deliver, and like it's, you know, it's kind of I don't know if it's historic or not, but it's an interesting high school. And I transferred out of that high school because like shit hit the fan with like I was just like fucking tired of getting people, like, I mean, seeing people get stabbed, and like just it was just like a hardcore setting, and like I was drinking in class, like on like during, I was like hotboxing the restrooms. I was, you know, I was not in a good place. My older brother kind of realized that, and he kind of like, all right, well, let's take you to like a more cleaner neighborhood, and go to sorry, I get nervous sometimes.
It's okay.
and he said, okay, well, how about you go to Alhambra High School? So
Alhambra High School.
Nice.
Okay.
And I was like, you know, I was there, but I still live in East LA, so I would read LA Weekly because I would take the bus from East LA to Alhambra, and I would read the paper, I mean, to find out what shows were, like, mm-hmm. what punk shows were happening, you know, because mm-hmm. this was before it was all ads. and then, you know, I just, like, one day was bored, and I started reading Jonathan Gold, and I read Jonathan Gold that he would drop references to, like, the Ramones or, like, you know, some kind of punk references, and I was like, oh, that's pretty mm-hmm. cool. I can, and like, you know, because it was Jonathan Gold, he would write about places that were, like, literally walking distance to my high school in Alhambra.
Yeah.
So
places that you may have already known about, places that you've never heard of.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't
gems.
Yeah, so that kind of like piqued my interest in the first, and it opened my eyes. And but you know, at that time I was flat broke, so I wouldn't eat food. I would just go and like to the restaurants and like read the takeout menu and like study it. I don't know why. I was like super geeky, and I would just I would collect takeout menus from all like the restaurants in Alhambra, and I like in like a couple
That's
of months,
awesome.
I had like a junk drawer full of like, takeout menus and that I would know like by heart. It's like super fucking weird.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so
cool. So you were born for this shit.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird, man. But
so would you like collect these menus and then like save up money and then one day go to one and you would have like a list of like, all right, when I'm going to save up and go to this spot.
Yeah.
This one's at the top of my queue.
You know what? Like, when I transferred, I didn't really make friends at all. So, like, everyone else would go eat like an In-N-Out or like I don't know, Rick's Burger or something. And I would like,
mm-hmm.
I would go to like have some falafel down the street at Wahib's Middle Eastern, or I would go have like a banh mi that mm-hmm. I still eat to this day. It's the best banh mi I've ever had.
Oh, which banh mi is that?
Oh man, now like I'm gonna have to tell you guys. it's Bale, BA LE. It's on Atlantic and Valley.
Okay.
They bake their own baguette every morning. They have the same oven that like Tartine does in San Francisco.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's super serious. And they like make their own mayonnaise from scratch.
Bale.
Yeah.
Is it still very
it's still
cheap?
There. Yeah, it's super cheap. Yeah, it's like $3 for like like barbecue pork or something. So
beautiful.
Yeah. And I probably burnt it out right now, but I love this place. And I haven't written about it because
the spot is blazed.
Yeah, but you guys
okay,
are cool.
It's
you guys
okay.
Are cool. You guys are cool. So
don't worry, we're not recording.
Yeah, there's no power on.
I mean, a lot of people listen to this, but it's not Jonathan Gold or something.
No.
So there's not going to be a line. But we've already learned something great because I love a banh mi.
Love a banh mi.
Dude, this banh mi is so great. I hate it when like somewhere like, you know, like in the West Side or downtown, they have a banh mi, but it's like not really a banh mi.
No.
Like Vietnamese French bread, it's like not as thick and dense as like French bread, like as a French baguette. It's
not
like
even close.
Chewier, airier.
Like it's almost artificial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, there's probably some stabilizers or some dough conditioners in the dough.
Not unlike like a Mexican baked
the bolillos, the Mexican
exactly,
bolillos are like
exactly.
Way closer to it than
very,
an actual
very
French.
Exactly.
Airy.
And like, I hate it when it's just like a dry, dense, like real baguette. It's like you just feel
it's terrible.
Like you eat too much bread, and it's like I don't know.
And it'll cost $9 instead
digressing.
Of $2.
No, this is what that you're not digressing. That's exactly what we like to talk about on this
yeah,
podcast.
Yeah, we have an hour-long, long format conversation podcast. It's nothing but digressing
seriously.
And tangents and all that shit. So you would save up these menus, and then it would be like a cool thing for you to go out and try. Would you like take a family member? Or would
no,
you go
dude,
by
I would
yourself?
Go by myself. I remember I didn't know what the hell was wrong with me because I would just like... I really wanted to eat these foods, but I was like, why? Like, why can't I just settle for like a burger? Why can't I just settle for a slice of pizza like my peers, like my friends?
No, strive for excellence.
Yeah,
man.
And then
well,
like,
you don't know that at that age.
And then like, you know, and like, I wouldn't want to like, you know, eat in the restaurant by myself, like sitting at, you know, like mm-hmm. next sitting at a table and like get like waited and you know like eat your food. For me, that was right. So weird. So I would literally get takeout and just like eat it like in the alley, like fucking like if no one's really looking at me because I was so ashamed. I was like.
Don't look at me!
And then, I mean, and then I just did that for like.
Do you remember your first meal from a restaurant that you read about in Jonathan Gold's column that was like the moment for you that changed?
Golden Deli. Golden Deli and Pho. You know, that was also pretty close to my high school.
Yeah.
So, and also, it's a little known fact that Mexicans love pho. I don't know if you guys have ever noticed.
I knew that Mexicans love Korean barbecue.
Yeah.
Yeah. We love like meaty, like savory, like just.
Also soups.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I was.
Yeah.
Menudo.
Like a fishy broth.
Yeah.
All that good stuff.
Chickeny
so,
broth.
So I would take my dad to go to Golden Deli and he like loved it. Like he would request to go, like, let's go have a, he would call it a sopa china, which is kind of messed up, but like, cause it's not china, but it's
like, Chinese soup.
Yeah, and I'm like, no, Dad, it's sopa vietnamita. Like, no, it's, and it's but he would request it, so we would just go
close enough for a dad.
So, exactly.
He's like, Mijo, get
for
the
a Mexican
we'll,
dad.
We'll take that for a dad.
That, like, dropped out of like elementary school. So
that's great. Okay? So and this is such a cool journey because it's so personal and it's so done on your own with a little bit of help from Jay Gold. But it's like, do you remember when you started dragging your friends, or could you, or like at a certain point where like they ate some of your takeout and they're like, what the fuck is this wizard magic in this box right here?
No, it wasn't wizard magic. It was like, what is this like overpriced, like weird shit? It was more like that, man. Cause you know, friends, this is like, well, I was like 17, 18. Yeah. So like, you know, your friends don't have that kind of palate that like,
this isn't a hot pocket.
Yeah, exactly. And like some of them would occasionally go with me, but most of them were just like, I developed like a reputation like similar to like Andrew Zimmern at that age, like, oh, you're hot, you love eating weird shit, like go try
I could be spending this money on beer and cigarettes.
Exactly.
What and the I, fuck yeah, are you doing?
Exactly.
Blowing like, $30 bucks on lunch.
I'm not even beer, but malt liquor. Malt liquor and singles from the liquor store. So single cigarettes.
Is this Lucy's? Talking about the Lucy's?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I had that same transition when I was younger. Like, I wanted to eat all this nice food, but when you see how much money you have in your pocket and Friday night's coming up and you could buy a six-pack and a pack of cigarettes, or you could buy some weed or whatever it is, and you can have, you know, go out and party that night and eat, you know, Del Taco, or you could, you know, it took a while to get to the point where you're spending money on some really
luckily
good
for
food.
Me at that point, you know, because that kind of I did have to make up my mind whether I wanted to, like, you know, spend money on food or spend money on beer. Spend money on a bum to buy me beer and have to buy him beer. I was lucky enough that, you know, in East LA, there's all these like street taqueros like that make tacos for like $1 or less. Back then it was less. So, you know, I could have my good food and have my beer too.
Yeah.
So,
you know. Yeah, you really grew up in a great place to get.
Yeah.
You know, now we know that it's world class food because it's been covered by, you know, all TV shows and writers and everything like that. Everyone says all the best Mexican food is in your neighborhood where you grew up. And it's very cheap, but, you know, growing up, you guys knew that the whole time, but everyone else was kind of afraid to go there.
Yeah, well, I mean, in their defense, like, it was fucking crazy, like, for sure. I mean, I've had a gun put on my stomach. I've, like, seen some pretty, like, you know, like, gruesome fights, like, blood, you know, like, just, I mean, East LA at that point, like, not Boyle Heights, I'm talking about, like, more east than Boyle Heights.
Right.
Before
right.
Commerce, like, south of Monterey Park and north of, like, Linwood. That's, like, East LA proper.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, definitely was, like, crazy back then, you know, but this is before, like, before the concept of gang injunctions, before, you know, when it was just, like, unregulated as fuck out there, so.
Yeah. And now, you know, whenever I go there, it seems very...
Yeah, now they like you.
Pretty chill.
On the way here, I was on my scooter, and, like, you know, I can't, like, fucking bust out my phone and, like, see where I need to make a ride on. So, like, I was by Super King on San Fernando.
Oh, yeah.
And I had pulled over, and, like, there was, like, this cholo guy, like, young, I don't know, probably, like, 20-something. And I can tell he was cholo because he had, like, you know, tattoos all over his eyes. Mm-hmm. And he was just walking. He was walking, and then he told me something, and I was like, fuck. And then he's like, and then he smiled, and then he's like, he was thinking out loud. He's like, oh, he stopped because he can't look at his phone while he's riding. Ooh. Oh, and I'm like, yeah, what's up? Like, so, you know,
don't shoot.
Yeah, no, don't like steal my scooter, please.
And if that happened to you at 17 in East LA, it might be a different story.
No, I mean, you know, you just grow. You learn to cope with that kind of stuff. I mean, you learn to deal with that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, you really learn to, like, I remember. I mean, we can have a whole podcast just on, like, fucking, like, all, like, the shit I've had to deal with, like, with cholos in my life. But, you know, I really do feel like you kind of grow, not immune to it, but you just kind of grow, like, I don't know, you get, it's just,
you're
becomes
just used
life.
To it.
Yeah, it becomes life.
That's a part of it.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned a few minutes ago them thinking you're the Andrew Zimmern kind of guy, and they told me to ask you about when Andrew Zimmern came to your house.
Who told you?
The streets?
I think it may have been Fernando.
Oh, man.
It was either him or Shona.
Fernando and I, like, we
Fernando Lopez from from Wilowetza, who was on here.
It's Fernando Lopez from the James Beard Award-winning Wilowetza.
Seriously,
you gotta like put that in there.
I got to touch that medal. It felt good in my hands.
Did you bought it?
No, I went to the restaurant and his sister had it out, and I was like, "Let me touch that, please. Can I just hold it for a minute?" And she's like, "Oh yeah, whatever." And then it felt nice to wear it. Didn't earn it though.
He was great. His podcast was amazing, and some of the stories too about his dad and bringing that food over, that Oaxacan food over, was really one of my favorite parts of one of the things we've done.
Yeah, but in a early episode of Andrew Zimmern's Bizarre Foods, he went to your house.
Yeah, that was crazy, man. That was like, I think it was season two, or I think even the first season, one of the last episodes of the first season. But it was, you know, they came to LA, and they had sent out like an email to like, you know, like to the few food bloggers that were around, and like I just like emailed back really enthusiastically. But you know, I'm just like a good person. This is before I knew that like that was information that I probably I could have been paid for. So I just you know, email like, I can remember like 500 words, and just like, oh, you can go here, you can go that, you can try this, you can do that. And then like I've never heard of Andrew Zimmern at the time, because this was before he got big for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, and I never had cable or satellite, or at least I didn't have it when I was
How long ago is that?
That was in 07.
Yeah, so this was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was like, it was when it was first starting out. And like they asked me if I would show him around and if I wanted to come out, and I'm like, sure, that's it, sure. Mm-hmm. And then like I never seen an episode until the day that he came like knocking on the door, like, hey, it's time. And it was like early, I think it was like a weekend.
Was it like Ed McMahon like sweepstakes? Like there were balloons in the door. You just open the door. And you're like, who is everybody doing? What are you guys doing here?
But yeah, that was cool. I didn't realize like how much that would like kind of catapult my career, man. That really helped a lot, just like with my following on Twitter and just like, you know, people just associate. I still get some emails I got an email like a month ago from like someone that saw like a rerun. It's like, oh, where can I find some menudo like your mom's, because for the episode my mom made you know, like a menudo nopales, cactus huitlacoche, and like cactus fruit, which, you know, it wasn't that like, you know, like when you compare it to everything else he's fucking eating in the world.
Right,
it's not that weird.
But like, if you know, it's like
giraffe spleen.
I know, yeah. But like, if someone in Europe, like, oh, there's people out there that eat cactus. Let's
yeah, yeah, yeah. To a lot like, of.
But like, so that it was, but it was a really good experience, and you know, I met him early on, and he let me like tag along to like shoot like the rest of his like LA episode, and yeah, like I said, man, still to this day, I still get emails from it, and like friend requests on Facebook or something.
That's great. So.
Yeah, that happens all like whenever friends of ours who have restaurants where like Guy Fieri went there on his show, even like 5, 6, 7 years ago episodes, whenever they rerun, there'll be a line out the door still.
Yeah.
Just because, like, hey, we just heard about this place on a rerun. You kind of forget how big the TV audience really is.
It's huge.
It's just like, oh, just a random rerun of this show on the Food Network, and like 500,000 people are watching it right now.
Yeah, I actually just came back. I was out in the field today because I'm doing a story on Chichen Itza, which is a Yucatan restaurant in downtown, which is also really good.
Yep.
I was talking to the chef. His name's Gilberto, and he was telling me how. He came on, or that restaurant came on Diners, that fucking show.
Drive-ins and Dives.
Yeah, thank you so much. And so they gave him like a heads up that they're coming. They gave him like a heads up that they're gonna air the episode, and you know, because that way you can make more food and just be prepared for.
Yeah, bulk up your staff.
Which is kind of like, you know, you hear that TV's dying, and you hear like, you know, that not many people are watching TV, but then
like, I mean, Netflix is killing it and everything, and. But still, I mean, especially with him and his show.
Again, we're digressing.
Yeah, it's also how people consume it, too. It's like, you know, they're watching it on their iPhone off YouTube from somebody that posted a link. You know, they may not be sitting down in their living room and, like, you know, gathering the wagons to watch the episode, but it's crazy just even a little bit of content that can get out there on something like that show. Well, yeah.
So is that restaurant very busy now?
It's always been busy. I would call it a landmark for sure. Cause I mean, have you been to that, the plot, like the little, the mercado that it's in? No, it's not a mercado. It's they call it La Paloma complex. It's like an indoor food court thing.
I don't think I've been there. No,
it's really good. If you ever have to like go to the DMV,
mm-hmm.
and like don't want to go to the one here by your house, you can go to the one in downtown and justify a trip there.
If you ever want to go to the DMV downtown,
yep,
which is probably the worst one.
It is.
Actually, Hollywood might be the worst one.
I feel like Hollywood would be.
Yeah,
I feel like downtown could be a sleeper, but you're saying maybe. Absolutely not. No way.
Well, I mean, I mean,
there's no good DMVs.
I filled my behind the wheel like there like three times, so and I passed it in Pasadena. So,
But you're also driving around downtown for the test, right?
Yeah,
which is a beast.
Oh, jeez,
don't want that.
Yeah. Right, so, again, digressing. So now that you're working for Vice, and how has that changed the way you're writing about food, other than having maybe a budget to do this stuff?
Yeah, well, it's definitely, you know, Munchies, we're more about storytelling. We're more about narrative. We're just like, you know, it's a good piece of writing. It's a good piece of, it's a good story, regardless whether there's food involved or not.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel when this job found me, because the way I found out about it was like people on Twitter were like, tweeting at me and tweeting at them, telling them, "Hey, this is your guy." So I didn't even know about it. And then everything else in my life, I fell ass backwards into it.
Thanks to Twitter,
was in the right time. Yeah, exactly. Right place in the right time. And
so they were looking for the West Coast editor of Munchies.
Yeah,
And you were doing a bunch of food writing with your site.
No, everywhere. I was by that point.
And you're doing freelance for other places.
Yeah, I mean, I was a restaurant scout for Jonathan Gold.
Oh.
I'm still kind of am. But I did that for officially for LA Times for like 3 years.
So yeah, he has like a group of people who will go out and find places for him.
Yeah, he's only one belly, so
one big belly. Beautiful round belly.
I know.
So you're his East LA.
Everything,
eyes on the street,
man,
or just everything?
Everything, yeah. Like, I did some stuff for the Valley for him, and just East LA. Just like, you know, just anything that he can't do anymore.
That's amazing. So,
he needs boots on the ground.
You growing up, learning about food from reading his articles on the bus in LA Weekly. I mean, sure, when you got that call from him to help out, or
well,
that email.
I had emailed him like when I was a junior, because you know all my friends were like majoring in like political science and like. Fucking business, and I was like, I don't want to do this. I don't know why. I just don't want to do that. And so I was like, but I want to do what Jonathan Gold does. And then I literally emailed him. I'm like, hey, I want to do what you do. How can I get there? And then he was like, well, there's no like clean cut way to get there, but you can do that. You can do this. You can do this. And then because of that, he's just kind of helped me out.
That's great.
On this time, so
that's amazing.
Yeah. So never hesitate to reach out to. Yeah. Your idols.
Yeah.
Someone's going to be nice and show you the way.
And you know, I feel like, you know, because of that, you know, I learned my craft like the old fashioned way without having to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember I would go to school. Like I went to Pasadena City College and like I would like say no to assignments or I wouldn't because I was already getting published by that time, like by LA Weekly.
Okay.
Like I had published my first cover story for Sever in New York. In 2011.
Wow.
That was like 1,600 words, like 14 recipes that I developed. And I was already doing that, but yet I was still going to school. And I remember the exact moment when like my professor, my English professor, pulled me out because I showed her like the cover story that I did. And she's like, why are you still coming to school for? This is
you already made it, bro.
Yeah.
I can't even do this shit.
Yeah, exactly.
She pulled you aside. I was like, can I borrow like $100? shit's rough out here in the Dina.
So did that. When you were a published person in these writing classes in college, did that make you kind of like a cocky person at a young age, or were you cool about it? Because I feel like I would be like a little bit of a hot shot. Like, I don't need this action here, guys.
Hey, Maverick, why don't you simmer down and back? I will once you publish something on the front cover of Sabre Magazine.
I know,
sure.
Right?
Well, that's good. Good for you to not do that.
I mean,
you still didn't finish.
As you can tell, like, you know, like by the shirt that I'm wearing today right now, it's like a punk was my first love, and then like food came after.
For listeners at home, he's wearing a Descendants shirt,
but with a stomach, with the
food theme Milo stomach.
Yeah, which is
burger,
you know, it's
ketchup,
kind of like the T-shirt version of their song "I Like Food."
Yeah,
You know,
food
like
is good.
Teenage girls with ketchup too. It's like little.
Oh yeah. So this shirt is really the epitome of you.
It is. That's like I wore it today.
It's a food related Descendants T-shirt.
I needed the confidence boost.
It couldn't get any more on the nose for you.
Yeah, exactly. So
suit armor on top.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah. But the way I dropped out of college was actually like the most like. Again, I'm just one lucky motherfucker, dude, honestly. Because what happened was that I actually had an accident on my scooter on my first day of school, on my way there. So I fell, I broke my leg, broke my foot.
Lucky.
And then like I know, and then because of
jealous.
That, they kicked me out. Like, you know, I didn't call and I didn't let them know because I was just like fucking in shock. So
sure.
And like so I never went back. Since that day, so
and that was it. That was God. God struck you down and said, yeah. You don't need this life.
Yeah,
so you're already in Savour.
And yeah, ever since then, man, it's never been happier. I just hate it.
Well, that's great. That's much. I mean, much like the chef world, where it's turning into the situation where people are saying, "Don't bother going to culinary school when you can just go knock on every door of every restaurant and say, I'll start cutting onions and peeling potatoes and work your way up and you'll start in the same place as if you went to CIA and spent a quarter of $1 million
same
on
thing
your
with
tuition.
Me. I got really lucky because I started keeping a daily journal when I was in third grade and I just kept it going.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because of the stupid cartoon Doug. Did you guys ever remember that?
Doug is not stupid, okay?
Okay, I'm sorry. All right. I'm sorry, Mr. Jim Jenkins. Thank you for inspiring my life. if you're listening to this.
Jim's a big fan.
He's listening.
So yeah, that show that really like I want to do that too. I want to write in my journal every day, talk about my stuff. So.
Damn.
So it was. I'm telling you, I'm just one lucky dude, man. That's all I can say. I was at the right time and I just did the right things. And
okay. So now that your advice, how has that changed your life? Other than having a full-time 9-to-5 job for a major company.
You know, Vice is perfect for me because, you know, I feel like when you write for a living, when you write about food for a living for like a decade, of course I started part-time jobs and stuff, but like that was my main source of income. And like, you just become really jaded, you know, like you start to like really question, like I can be writing about much more like important stuff than like this soup being too fucking like cold, you know, like so
okay
so I was at that point when I was really like I was like kind of like in a crossroads because I had started writing about music a lot too, so I would just kind of like I wanted to write about other stuff and not just like reviews. So then this Munchies is just we're exactly that. We're about like the stories behind the people that are involved in food, you know. And so and that's why we have a lot of like, you know, like sincere readership, because you know it's just people that love a good piece of content and not just like a foodie or like a
yeah, if the, yeah. Much like a documentary film, if the story is good enough, it doesn't matter what the subject is about.
And that's every story that I publish on Munchies has to have that. I always think about, okay, if you take out the food element, is it still a good story?
Yeah.
What is one story that you did that what's been your most successful or popular story?
When I first got this job, I knew that I was up against New Yorkers, so I really wanted to like go off with a bang. Like I really wanted to just like go big.
Yeah, because all the Vice people are in New York.
Yeah, that's the headquarters.
And you're the one food guy in LA.
I'm the lone wolf renegade out here. Wild west, best coast, but still.
So you had to come out with some strong stuff.
Yeah,
so
my first story that I published was one that I just kind of stumbled into it, and it was this the street vendor who like is based in Sylmar, in San Fernando, no, in Pacoima. Yeah, Pacoima, and she fled Mexico because he was a good cop, and he gave a ticket to a person that he wasn't supposed to, like a narco person.
Yeah. Okay.
And then he refused to like take it back, and he was like, he was probably like the only good cop in fucking Mexico, but he refused to like, you know, like
because all the other ones are dead.
Because all the ones are dead or like super, you know, like are getting paid by these narcos, and so he refused to, and then he just, you know, the guy threatened him, and so he just, you know, he fled because he didn't want to die. So he came to L.A. Not having any family. But he just came here, and then he couldn't make a, he couldn't find a job because I think he came like 2008, 2007, you know, when it was really bad. So he just started cooking. He started cooking food, and then he's always cooked food like his whole life for himself.
Mm-hmm.
So it was about, the story was about the street vendor who fled Mexico, became like an amazing street vendor, and also it had political kind of backbone because, you know, it's illegal to vend any kind of anything on LA sidewalks right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was it tackled all these elements, but at the end of the day, it was just like, you know, like a human interest about this person and how much he's like been dealt with, and then he just makes amazing food. So
what kind of food does he do?
It's Guadalajara style, so like Jalisco. So, which I feel, my whole thing is like, I you know, like with the when most writers write about Mexican food, and chefs even, they kind of focus on like the media darling states of like Oaxaca, Puebla, Mexico City. That's mm-hmm. pretty much it, mm-hmm. if you think about it. Maybe Chiapas, maybe like Guadalajara. So like, my whole thing is like try to find like other, you know, like the cuisine of the other states.
The roads less traveled.
Yeah, so exactly. So this guy makes like the food of Guadalajara, which if you haven't been, it's if I had to compare it to like a U.S. city, like LA is like Guadalajara and Mexico City is like New York.
Okay.
So it's just more spread out, you know, cleaner air, and it's just more, the food is a lot more like dry chili focused.
Okay.
I'm sorry, dry chile focused. No, it's because if my girlfriend hears me, she's gonna like kill me.
There's certain chili words that you have to say, yeah, with the full say, accent.
Yeah. And actually it's a big thing for me. Like chile is one of them. Tamal is one with no e in the end for mm-hmm. when you're saying it in a singular.
Okay, yeah. So one tamale is tamal,
yeah,
and then tamale. Multiple tamales. Yeah.
And like if you look tamales. Up like any kind of like Facebook post of like, I don't know, like BuzzFeed, if they do a mention of like tamales, like every other thread is every other comment is gonna be like, oh, what's a tamale? It's like because people
are, right.
So yeah, FYI, if anyone out there is listening to this, if there's one thing that you take away from this conversation is that it's tamal with no e.
Solo tamal.
Yeah.
Okay, so Guadalajara is more dry chile based.
Dry chile focused. And this guy makes birria.
Okay.
So, but it's just super dry chile, again, dry chile focused. And it's spicy and it's soupy. It's braised goat. And then he also makes tortas ahogadas, which I don't know if you guys have ever had. Have you guys heard of it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have heard of it.
You're lying to me.
No, I mean, I'm trying to remember what kind of torta that is, though.
Well, if you guys want to go have a good torta ahogada, the only place to get it here, and I mean, not the only place, but the most legit place is all the way in Downey. So you guys are gonna have to bust a mission.
Okay.
It's called Tortas Bravas, like mm-hmm. you know, like brave tortas.
Mm-hmm.
And a torta ahogada is, I describe it as like a torta that fell in like in a pool of like salsa.
Mm.
So it's kind of like the wet burrito concept here, which is the Americanized version, but it's like a wet torta.
Mm-hmm.
But like the salsa, it's like a watery tomato one, and
like a French dip.
Yeah, perhaps. It's like a Mexican French dip, exactly. Like
okay.
Yeah, and then inside it has like a like super tender carnitas.
Okay.
And like pickled onions.
Mm-hmm.
Not Yucatan style pickled onions. They're not red. They're just like white pickled onions.
Okay.
And the salsa smells like oregano, and it's just like you eat it with a fork.
Okay.
But the whole thing about a torta ahogada is that it's made with a birote salado, which is like a Guadalajara baguette. It's kind of crazy. It's a sourdough Guadalajara baguette. In Guadalajara, they have sourdough baguettes that you can only get there. People say it's like, you know, it's like the New York thing where it's like water and air.
Yep.
But, okay. And it's true. Every time we go to Guadalajara, because my girlfriend is from Puerto Vallarta, and we go there like once a year, and we always bring back like a bag of like a dozen like Guadalajara baguettes. I mean, a birote salado. But mm-hmm. this place that I told you about in Downey is Tortas Bravas, and they do a pretty good job. They make it themselves. It doesn't taste the same, but it's pretty damn good. Like for LA, for LA.
Mm. When you eat it with a fork, so it's all soggy.
It's all
and
soupy, and it also comes with beans. So it's like a thin layer of beans. It's a very minimalist torta. It's more about the sauce. You're just eating it like a. I made fun of a restaurant Lemonade once because they had like a, they call it a Southwest panzanella, and I was like,
so dumb. But this is very much like a panzan, because it just soaks up the sauce. You
right.
Know, you yeah. eat it, and it's just like, it's good. So.
Sounds amazing.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, so. And that's exactly what I'm trying to change. That's what I want to write more about, like, you know, like, we all know what a taco al pastor is. We all know that what a mole is. I mean, what mole is. We all know, like, there's just so much more out there that hasn't made it to LA. And it has, but not, it still hasn't, like, you know, hit it.
With, not on a broad scope.
Yeah. Although, Downey, got to figure out a game plan. Got to bring
some
bottled water. Some dried preserves. Casey breakdown on the way. No, I'm just kidding.
I can figure it out for you guys. If you guys want a game plan, I'm all about like making like little food trips. Like every time I have to go somewhere for work or we have to go, or my girlfriend and I have to go somewhere, I always like look up what restaurants are around there, and I always because you always have to justify it that way.
Absolutely.
So
make a day of it.
If you go there, in that same plaza is a Mexican supermarket called Amapola.
Amapola?
Amapola. And dude, they have the best masa in LA. Period. Mm. Hands down.
Really?
Like 100 and tortillas. They make their own tortillas, like package.
Mm-hmm.
I'm digressing, but like the state of LA tortillas is really bad. It's just, if you think about it, what happened to tortillas is the same thing that happened to bread. They got loaded with preservatives,
mm-hmm.
with, you know, it became like maseca, which is GMO corn.
Mm-hmm.
This place, it's all white corn, and it's just, it tastes like butter. It's just amazing masa. And then their tortillas too. So you can go have a torta, go buy like a shitload of masa,
mm-hmm.
and tortillas. I literally buy like six packs at a time, and I freeze them just because like I can't eat any of the tortillas anymore.
Damn.
And it's because my girlfriend is from Mexico. So like when she came and I was trying to impress her with all this, like, oh, look, baby, we have these tacos. And she's like, she would eat the meat only, because it's like the tortillas here are that bad if you're from Mexico.
Right.
Because Mexico, you know, like they're anti-GMO, they're all about heirloom corn. Every tortilla has like their own distinct flavor.
Yeah.
But in LA, it's all about good
heirloom. Yeah, in Mexico, yeah. You're not even allowed to have any GMO stuff, exactly. Right?
And, like, and that was just a big deal that recently, you know, got written about.
Yeah.
So, and then after that, there's a hole in the wall called Uncle Henry's Tavern in that same plaza. And they have like 70 taps or something. Crazy, amazing beers. So,
damn.
Yeah.
So it's got it all.
Got a hat trick right there to pull off.
I wrote about this. If you guys want to Google it, it's called, if you just Google my name, Javier Cabral and KCET and Southeast LA. And okay. It was like a little day trip that you can just do, like, do all these things and more. So.
And more. And maybe, I guess, if you hit the tavern, take an Uber to Downey.
Yeah.
When you buy your masa, what do you do with it?
I do everything with it. I
bathe in it.
I like rub my skin with it.
I do a facial scrub.
No, I just make tortillas and I make tacos. I mean, that's like my go-to. Like,
you make tamales? Like,
tamales. They do have masa para tamales, but I'm you know, I don't have time for that shit anymore. I just any instant like gratification, tacos, quesadillas. So I don't. That's all I do. But okay. But this masa is so good that you can just eat it with like a piece of cheese, or even like, as I'm telling you, man, it's crazy.
Really?
It'll change your life. Yeah, it's all white. Also, the other thing is that they're the only tortilleria that has white corn in it. It's made 100% from white corn. Mm-hmm. Every other tortilleria that makes masa from nixtamal is yellow corn.
Okay.
And it just has a really deep, like, chewy, kind of corny flavor. This white one is just more like buttery, starchy. I don't, you have to have it.
Okay. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's a more of a neutral.
Yeah.
What are you doing tonight?
Damn, I'm learning so much already. What is your favorite tamal? Favorite kind of tamal?
You know what? I recently had my first uchepo, which is original tamal from Michoacan, made only with blended up like fresh corn, fresh white corn. So there's no masa involved. It's just Some people add like a little bit of masa because it's, you know, it's obviously much more expensive to do like, you know, 100% sweet corn tamal.
Yeah. Right.
So when you steam it, it's just it's super sweet, but there's no sugar added. You know, it's just sweet white corn, and the texture, it's kind of like when done correctly, it's like kind of like a polenta, but like a sweet polenta. And then you eat it with a dollop of Mexican crema,
mm-hmm.
Salty cotija cheese, and salsa verde, and it's just like sweet and salty.
So it's like a soupier thing. Ever. It's not like a solid chunk like a normal tamal.
It's not dry. It's moist. But okay. it's a tamal. It's just, in Michoacán, they have that style, and it's called Uchepo. It's spelled U C H E P O. And there aren't that many places to find it in LA. That's the biggest issue. There's one place that has it in Highland Park by my house called Felimex Market, but only on Saturdays and Sundays. But yeah, you have to get there by like 11 a.m. or else they're gone. It's an old lady that makes them and drops them off in the store and just like
throws themselves
in there.
And they're always eaten by themselves. They're never with meat.
No meat. Yeah. I usually like meat and like tamales, but this one is like, it sounds like weird because it's all corn, but like when you have it with the sour cream and with the cotija and with the salsa verde, it's just like, you know what? I think now that I think of it, it's almost like eating like the Mexican street corn on the cob.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, but instead of mayonnaise, you add like crema, but they're both kind of serve the same purpose, creamy, rich. So.
Sure.
Is it blended smooth? Are there like pieces of corn in it?
There's pieces of this chunky. Yeah. It's like smooth and chunky. That's awesome. The other, and like another tamal that I'm going to recommend is, Yucatan style. It's called a tamal colado, which is that one's a more traditional tamal. It's a banana leaf wrap one, and it the masa used to make it is strained through a sieve, so all the solids get left behind, and you just get left with like fluffy, like pillow like tamal, and then it has like
a souffle almost.
Yeah, exactly, like a fucking souffle, and it's like with pork or chicken, and then you top it with like some salsa of like habanero. And you drink with an agua fresca, and it's like amazing. And for that, I would recommend going to. I would recommend going to the only place that makes them in LA, and has it on the menu every day. It's also in Highland Park. It's called El Faisani El Venado. It's on Avenue 50 by the train tracks, in between York and Fig.
Oh, okay.
It's a small hole in the wall, and I live in Highland Park, so my
friend lives right there.
Yeah, and dude, it's this hole in the wall. You can drive by like 1,000 times, and you're never gonna find it. But they also have the best the cochinita pibil, dude. Super tender, super fucking tender. It's like, it's crazy. Like I'm gonna admit that I love pork belly, and like when I eat pork, I usually always try to eat pork belly, and I forgot about pork chops. I forgot about any other cut. It's
easy to do that.
Yeah, and this cochinita pibil is like so good that it's like you want to like it's amazing. It just melts in your mouth. So,
damn son,
the man sitting next to me does not look like he eats a lot of pork belly.
Yeah,
so you can get away with it.
I'm 6'2" and I weigh 134.
Yeah, living the dream.
God damn.
Yeah.
Do you feel like when you get older you're gonna turn fat?
That's what everyone's been saying. I'm 26 now.
I know that happens to women more, right? Like when you see like a fine Mexican girl, you're like, all right, when she's when she hits 40, has a couple kids, it's all gonna go down.
No comment.
Yeah, I don't want to sleep on the couch tonight, dog. I'm back in. I'm stepping my way out this doorway.
How do you, is it all just metabolism? I mean, I feel like you just eat whatever you want.
First and foremost, metabolism. There's people that eat salad every day and they're still like fat as hell. So, secondly is like, I've definitely created my own like weird food, like my weird eating habits, just cause you have to, cause when you're around food 24/7, you like think food 24/7. You write for 24/7. For me, it's literally an obsession. Luckily I found writing to be able to make a fucking living out of it.
Yeah.
But my diet is it's kind of weird. Do you guys want to hear about it or
not? Absolutely.
100%.
100%.
Okay. Well, what I do is it's really fucking hard. It's really weird. I try to only eat like one type of carb a day. So like if I eat like bread during the morning, I'll try not to have pizza or burgers for lunch. Like diversify your carbs. Like not just eat like wheat, like pizza, toast, and burgers all day. Like
right, don't have a sandwich for lunch.
Yeah, like have sushi or have Thai food or have like mix it up like rice and then like for dinner have corn. It's really hard to do, but if you do that, I feel like I just have control over my because I'm not against carbs. Fucking love carbs, but I just. People seem to cut carbs like right away when they want to lose weight. And I don't feel like you have to do that. You can just diversify and not just have so much of like wheat or so much of corn or so much of rice, so much of potato, whatever, just.
So diversify the carbs and maybe make sure the source of carb that you're eating is coming from a whole source and not like a packaged, manufactured food.
Shout out to corn tortillas because they are a whole grain product. So
yeah. and whole, you know, everyone says eating whole grains is the way to go. And, you know, your body, you know, when it's digesting, it probably does not know the difference between corn or quinoa or whatever farro is hot right now. Yeah. A whole grain is a whole grain when it's inside of you.
Yeah. And also just, I mean, diversify my carbs is like, but like just diversify everything, man. Like, honestly, like I get really bored of foods. So like if I have like, you know, like pizza, like I don't know, like one day I'm not gonna have pizza for like another week at least or more. You know, like I just try to like, there's so much good food out there to eat, and like life is too short to eat the same goddamn foods every
time. Yeah,
like,
you're making a lot of people who don't live in a major metropolitan area jealous.
Yeah, sorry.
Because
about that,
luckily for us in LA, I mean, I eat the same exact way. And I often take for granted the luxury that we have, that every single day we can have a completely different, insane meal for every meal of our day.
Yeah, you could go a month without repeating if you really wanted to.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of a lot of work that a lot of people who aren't obsessed with food are not going to put in that work. They're just going to be like, yeah, I'll just eat the same shit every day. I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, you definitely have the benefit, too, of having food be such a huge part of your work and your life and your passion, and it's a lot easier to take for granted or not notice the work you're putting in, because it just seems intuitive, like, of course this is what I would do. I'd make this much effort to do this with food and eating in different places and varying places. But I mean, for the person that's like doing the 10-12 hour day with a kid, it's kind of like, what's not rotten in the fridge that I can just put in my mouth right now too. I that's not me, so I'm lucky in the same way, but it's like, it's nice that you get to, you know.
Yeah, we should all enjoy it while we can, fellas.
For sure.
Oh, yeah. Cheers.
Salud. What non-Mexican foods are you into?
Oh, dude. People associate me with Mexican food, I guess just because my parents are from Mexico. I was born here. And I love Mexican food, but like I just love all food, you know, like in general. So.
Your knowledge of established knowledge of Mexican food so far on this podcast is blowing my brain. Yeah. So, keep going, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was lucky enough that, you know, I moved to the San Gabriel Valley in high school, so I learned a lot there too, about, you know, just regional Chinese food, regional Vietnamese food, regional, everything, man. Even Korean food in Koreatown, you know. I just love all food, dude. Honestly, like, what do you want to know? Like, what do you want to like?
I mean,
just a favorite,
aside from Mexican food, what is like your next strongest food love?
How about this? Because we've talked about this before.
That sounds like
many
pizza.
People. What's your go-to hangover that is not Mexican or South American?
Hangover dim sum, dude.
Yes,
dude. Dim sum is the best. Dim sum is the best hangover. No one thinks about it. Everyone's like always like, oh, like ramen or menudo or like, I don't know, mariscos, and they're like,
chilaquiles. Menudo's great.
Dim sum.
I love menudo. Like,
dude,
you know,
something about like having the tannins in the tea with like greasy food. Dude,
yeah, the tea.
That will clear you out. You can't have dim sum without tea. And like,
no.
I'm like,
and they keep the tea coming.
And I'm going to share like a pro tip with everyone that will like change your dim sum experience. When you sit for dim sum.
Go with an Asian.
Well, I mean, yeah, aside from that. When you sit down at a table for dim sum, ask your server or the hostess before they leave to please serve you pu'er cha.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
Pu'er cha is a fermented black tea.
Made from pu'er.
Pu'er is the name. But it's actually a type of green tea that is fermented until it's like...
Right, but
like,
they're fermenting the pu'er leaves.
Oh, is that what it is?
Pu'er? Yeah, pu'er is a type of green tea.
Okay, and it's fermented and it's moldy, and it's like it literally looks like a cake, like it just like it looks like rotten and white all over.
Would you call it tea lacoche?
Nah.
That was a very bad joke.
I would call it like tea bucha or something.
okay.
Yeah, it's a better joke. I mean dim sum with pu'er tea is just, you're gonna be like fucking miserable. Like hitting your life, migraine, and then do that, and then get a massage afterwards. I go eat dim sum in the San Gabriel Valley.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I just
as like, you should.
You know. So, yeah.
If you can.
I don't like Chinatown much because it's just, I don't like dealing with parking and people, and an SUV you can escape all that and just kind of.
Mm-hmm.
So dim sum is one of those things that I just love. But Korean food, dude, I really love like sundubu with like a piece of galbi. super bomb, and like rice, and like, you know, just with a bunch of kimchi, and like, you know, like I feel like that. That's the kind of food that I crave after like a long stressful day at work. I just want to like take like, you know, solace in like fucking soup and just like.
Or Sam Tang with the chicken soup with like banchan too. If you're looking for something.
Yeah, I go to Beverly Soon Tofu, which I'm sure you guys have been.
Oh already. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I go there like at least once. I mean, as much as I can. If not, I go to Chago just because Chago is like under $10 and it's like amazing.
Yep.
I live like pretty close. It's on the way for me. What else do I?
What eat? About Mexican hangover food?
Mexican hangover food, mariscos, dude. Just ceviche, lemony ass, like I'm limey ass ceviches. You know, sour, sour, like thickly cut sashimi, like shrimp or just like on tostadas. But you should also get some good tostadas and just. I like to have aguachile, you know, so you blend a serrano with lime and cilantro until it's like milky and green, and then you put that in your seafood. You can do scallops, you can do shrimp, and then just kind of until it changes color, and then put some chopped onion, some chopped cucumber, salt, like a lot of salt. And then on top of a tostada with like avocado, and like if you're into like hair of the dog, a beer. Mm-hmm. If not, then like some agua fresca, you know. So,
What's your favorite ceviche?
My favorite ceviche right now, I'm gonna sound biased as fuck because I'm gonna say it's also in Highland Park. It's this woman. Really interesting story. The name of the food truck is called Mariscos El Faro.
Again, Mariscos El Faro.
Mariscos El Faro, which means like the lighthouse. In Spanish.
Okay.
You can look this up on Google and just look up Mariscos El Faro or Javier Cabral El Faro, and it'll come up because I did a report for this for Jonathan Gold, a scouting report we called it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the photos and like the food there. But what she makes, it's a really interesting thing. She gets like sweet water bass, which, you know, I'm sure she has her ways of sourcing this.
Sweet water bass?
Sweet water wide mouth bass.
So like a freshwater fish.
Yeah, freshwater fish.
And a lot of people are not usually eating wide mouth bass.
And it's like, and she, but hold on, what she does is she you know, she fillets it, super thick cuts, and then she cures it in salt for 48 hours. So it comes out like lox, and then you rinse it out and you slice it super thick, and then you put it on a tostada with like chiltepin pepper, which is like a. Like it's a pepper native to like to Sinaloa.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like they look like peppercorns, and it's a really dry, intense heat, almost like peppercorns. And the sauce with cucumber, onion, and ooh. It's like $5 or I think $5.50 now or $6. But it's like super well portioned.
And it's a thicker cut.
Yeah, it's not. You asked for ceviche, but this is what, it's not technically a ceviche, but it's like it's just so special.
So it's like a salt cod kind of feel to
it. But it's like it feels like sashimi. Like the cuts of fish are like rectangular and big.
Okay.
So you're chewing into it, and
it's
like,
soft when it's reconstituted.
It's not. No,
it's not that soft.
It doesn't dry out that much because it's only been in salt for like
a couple days.
So it's still. It's still like a little chewy, and like what they do that because in Sinaloa they love eating callo scallop,
mm-hmm.
but like, you know, scallop is not always easy to come by, so they develop
or cheap,
yeah, and they develop this way of like making fish feel and like scallop because it plumps up so much.
Oh.
Right? It just plumps up. If I didn't tell you, like if I brought you a tostada. And if you're eating it, and if I didn't tell you that it was fish, you would probably like think that you would probably one of your guesses would be scallop.
Is the fish flavor itself mild? Or is definitely. Like
the salt kills it. I mean, the salt. It's like it's almost like eating like unsmoked lox. You know, it's just like you're just eating. You're just eating like white fleshed fish that's been cured, and it's just the flavor is just primarily salt, but just the texture of the fish is so buttery because it's not dry and it's not fresh. It's like a weird in between.
Yep.
It makes it a little bit of that rubbery, chewy scallop kind of feel.
Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing. So try coming out of necessity of trying to duplicate the mouthfeel of a scallop.
Yeah. And
damn.
They also have these empanadas, the shrimp empanadas that are made from masa, and they put ground shrimp in the masa and they deep fry it, and inside it has chopped shrimp and cheese. And then you just like you eat them with like salsa and avocado, and it's just like
this. Same truck.
It's like a croissant. Yeah, same truck.
Oh.
Is the shrimp cooked or uncooked?
Yeah, that one's cooked. Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever had deep fried masa, something made out of masa and then deep fried.
Oh man,
that sounds phenomenal.
If done properly, like it's like a croissant. It's just so flaky.
Yeah, it's delicate. I mean, it's delicate to fry. I'm sure you can't just like throw them in there and let them go. It's like they're kind of being delicately dropped into the fryer.
Yeah, that
kind of
sounds
watched.
Like the fried shrimp taco from Mariscos Jalisco.
Yeah, this is kind of like the original shrimp taco. Like it was that I don't know if you know, but that product that was actually like born here in LA. A taco de camarón dorado. You know, if you go to like where Raúl is from in San Juan de los Lagos, like it's landlocked. It's like close to like tequila, like to like where they make tequila. It's not there's not much like there's not motion around there. So he created that here.
Mm-hmm.
This empanada, on the other hand, was created in Sinaloa, and it's basically like that because you eat it with like a salsa. It's not like drowned in a salsa with like chopped cabbage and like avocado, but.
Mm-hmm.
There's places in your life for both because I fucking love a taco dorado from my school. I was actually craving it this morning, but I didn't get to it. But,
yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, lastly, now that you've been at Munchies for a while now, what do you have planned for the future of Munchies involving yourself?
Complete domination.
Yes.
You trying to take down Eater? Trying to take down the Food Network?
Bullet.
Everything, man. We're just, you know, it's just my whole thing is, you know, I was born and raised in East LA, and I just want to represent LA and show like everything that's happening in LA right now, food wise, you know. And I'm really fortunate that I can do that with Munchies because, you know, I can write basically whatever. I mean, I've done some really cool stories already that I'm just so proud of. Every single story that I publish, I'm so proud of it. You know, I always like just. I catch myself rereading it, just like, oh, I'm so proud of that. That's
great.
Not ones that I put like that I write, but just you know my contributors, or you know, or ones that I write. But so yeah, I just plan on like you know representing the West Coast in the best possible manner, and that includes like Hawaii, Portland, Washington, Seattle, San Diego, Baja California too. I have some stories. I just did a really cool story on like why Mexican wine tastes like raw meat.
Whoa! Mm.
Have you guys ever had Mexican wine?
I don't think so. Or not one that tastes like raw meat.
Yeah,
I
mean, but I would think not remembering it tasting like raw meat.
There's some savory, salty, like meat-smelling like wine. So I interviewed the sommelier from Bracero, which is Javier Plasencia's latest restaurant in San Diego, which Javier Plasencia is like Mr. Tijuana. He's like Mr. Bahamed. He's like on the forefront. Changed Tijuana with his food. And I interviewed a sommelier who used to work at Bouchon, and he like broke it all down for me in a story. And that story was called Why does Mexican wine smell like raw meat?
like raw red meat?
Yeah, like raw chicken breast, dude.
Wow. The terroir down there?
Yeah, terroir, and also just it's so close to the ocean. And also they're using reclaimed ocean water to irrigate. So.
Oh.
Interesante.
Yeah. It's on facts. You guys have to.
That is a wild flavor profile wine. And I feel like I have not tried that before.
I don't know where they saw. I think the only place that I know to like that has Baja wine every day is Cacao in Eagle Rock. You guys have been there?
Oh yeah,
100%.
Yeah, and if you look at the menu every day, they have Mexican wine. So I'm sure you get some good ones. So I don't know if they'll be that like savory and that like animally, but like you can definitely. I'm sure after I tell you this, you're gonna like you're gonna take a swig and you're like, oh yeah, yeah. This kind of smells like chicken.
It tastes like salmonella.
Yeah, like a mezcal de pechuga, you know. That's made with chicken breast. So, have you guys had that before?
No.
So, like one of the more premium mezcal versions is a pechuga mezcal, and that's literally mezcal that has been not filtered, but just kind of it's dripped on a raw chicken breast.
What the fuck?
Yeah, and it's like the most premium mezcal you can get. It's like super expensive. It's like it'll be $40 a shot at Las Perlas, and it'll. And then if you go deeper into Oaxaca, there's raw venison mezcal, and there's like, yeah.
I guess it begs the question, why in the world would you, A, ever think to do that, and B, how does that make it better? How does it make it más chingón?
I don't know, man. I think it's definitely like an acquired taste. I think it makes it a little softer. I don't know how. You know, because, you know, I forgot what the term is, but, you know, in wine, when they use egg whites to clear, like, the must from the grape, you know, so it's not that crazy when you think about it, because, you know, there are American winemakers that are doing that.
Yeah.
There are some people who use fish liver to clarify beer. We also have a story on that at Munchies.
No shit.
So, yeah, and it's just ways of filtering your beverage. That's why you see, all of a sudden, you're seeing some beers say, like, vegan on them. I'm sure you guys have seen that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If you think about it, like, why would this beer not be vegan? That's because some
I think it's the biggest offenders are like, you know, macro, obviously. But so yeah, to create a less cloudy beer, they just use like fish liver, I think. Yeah, you can read our story.
That's amazing.
Cheese, yeah. Wow.
So the mezcal, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I can say that I'm a fan, because I've had some. I've had one with like raw venison. Like, gosh, it's fucking so gnarly. And also like served warm.
Yep.
So
yeah.
So it was like, oh, it was like a little soup or something, you know, like a little soup that I got you.
That's a lot
up.
To take in.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
I would try that. I would love to try that.
Sounds like
it's one of those things where you're describing something that sounds really interesting, but maybe not the daily driver, maybe not something that you want every time. But
I'm sure next you guys have the opportunity right now to like. You, I mean, if you guys want, like, you can go to like what's that place in like mezcal bar like in Highland Park that I go, La Cuevita.
Mm-hmm.
La Cuevita Alta, you know, they have Pechuga Mezcal, and it's like not that expensive. It's worth trying once, but if I were you guys, I would just probably just
so Pechuga Mezcal is what it's called?
Pechuga Mezcal is what it's called, and you know, that just means like breast Mezcal.
Does so, La Gualeguetza have one?
Yeah, also Gualeguetza has okay, one too. Good. Yeah, I mean,
their Mezcal there is awesome.
Yeah, dude, I think Gualeguetza is like the best Mezcal like selection in LA. I love going there as much as I can, just because, you know, it's not, you know, you're there just for the mezcal, and you're not there to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of hard to do here in LA, because
because
tequila and mezcal are so cool now, right? Mm-hmm. But there, it's like they don't give a fuck about that. It's just like, no, we have.
You just sit in the corner of a restaurant and quietly drink the best mezcal instead of hit the bar scene and mixing.
And on Fridays they have 2-for-1 mezcal shots.
No way.
Which today's Friday, so.
Oh, hi.
What are you doing tonight?
maybe drinking mezcal. Lastly, to go back to you saying you would collect restaurant menus of places that you wanted to try, now that you work at Munchies and you're a known name in the food world, what are there any restaurants like that for you now on an even higher level that you're hoping to one day try?
You know what? I'm happy, dude. I'm happy with where I'm at right now. And as far as like restaurants that I want to try, I mean, not any that I can think off like the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you know, it would be cool to go experience Noma. It would be cool before they turn into a vegetarian restaurant. It would be cool to, I really would have loved to go eat at the food at WD50, but why Dufresne? Because we just did a podcast for Munchies. Sorry. I don't mean to plug.
But, plug away, please.
But and like, you know, he talked about how, you know, his approach to food, and that was really cool.
Yeah, I wish I could have eaten at WD50.
Yeah, and the way it had, the way like that it closed down was so like, you know,
a real bummer.
Yeah, a real bummer. So, and it's, I think it's like still there. I don't think they've like built something over it yet.
Oh yeah, he was mentioning it's still just kind of like a fucked up rubble of foundation stuff. It's still not even built yet. Yeah, they had like it got bought out by a development company to put apartments up or something. Yeah.
Sure, I would love to go to Alinea. Fine dining was my like where I first kind of like got my my older brother started to my older brother who lives in Venice, and he's an art director. He also like a big graffiti like icon person for the West Coast. He took me out to like go eat, like at expensive restaurants first, like in the West Side.
Mm-hmm.
Like around the same time that I was doing like street food by Jonathan Gold. I mean, like not street food, but like, you know, SGV food. So I kind of had like the best of both worlds. And so fine dining was the first time that it made me realize like, oh wow, food's fucking awesome. Like a squash blossom stuffed with shrimp mousse. Fuck yeah, call me in.
So when he hit the age where he could start affording these ballin' ass meals.
Yeah, but now I mean I'm down for whatever.
Do you get a lot of free food?
You know what? Believe it or not, I kind of like that shit. It's like you have like your honeymoon period with it. You know, you just get over it, you know, like at first I did. And like, you know, I still get tons of invites, but I don't, you know, at the end of the day, I work all day, and like the last thing I want to do sometimes is just like go schmooze and like.
Yeah. Are you the kind of guy who wants to go eat every free restaurant invite that you get?
Oh man. No, dude. I those people putting a bad name. I mean, honestly, it just sucks. Cause you know, there's kind of something's missing between like PR and like restaurant PR and like publications, you know, and I feel like free food isn't always the answer for, you know, I have a personal connection to this because I started food blogging so young when I was like, you know, I was one of the first LA food blogs, and I was one of the first to get invited to go eat free meals.
And like, you know, I was like just a kid from East LA, like just a punkin at first, and I was like, oh fuck yeah, free food. It's awesome.
Of course. Yes.
And also I wasn't even 21 yet. I was like 19 or 18 and like 20. And like I would just walk in with everyone else, walking like I owned the place, and they would fucking serve me alcohol everywhere.
Oh.
So I would take the bus. Because I would just had it on my little scooter and I knew I was gonna drink, so I would just take the bus, get fucking tanked off like free booze and free food,
eat like a king.
Yeah, and like you know fucking steak.
So how do I get into that? How do I
hold
do
on,
that?
Hold on. And then what happened was that you know someone did like a story, like a profile on me. LA Weekly did, and they totally used me as like the poster child for like free food. So I was kind of like,
oh
yeah. Yeah, dude. So
you got known as the mooch.
Yeah, exactly.
Damn.
But I didn't know. I didn't think about it with those kind of capitalist kind of intentions. For me, it was just free food and free drink. Yeah, like I was fucking like my dad filed bankruptcy. We lived like we were kind of homeless for a while. Like I was like, fuck yeah, like free food.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, awesome. Even you know whether or not you are very poor or you're just any 19-year-old kid like. Having a nice restaurant say, here, come drink for free and eat an insane meal for free.
Yeah.
Even me to this, you know, even me, I'll get invited to a few things here and there, and I still feel like a fool for not eating all the free food.
Yeah.
Well, just from growing up.
But it also, it's like, it's when, since you do it professionally, and since that's what was getting your name out there, and then the profile does that, you know, that's, your dynamic changes when you're being viewed by the things you're doing in the industry that you're in. So like for music, you turn down invitations to shows or certain things or stuff. You turn down things that people that are into music would be like, absolutely, I'd love to go to that. 'Cause like, but, you know, I need to navigate this. I need to figure out how this works. I need to kind of manage my image, my brand to a small extent in a way. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's crazily curated, but, you know, like if you're not in food and no one's going to know who you are there, and somebody offers you 10 meals, you're going to say yes to 10 of them if you can go. Because it doesn't reflect on your personality or your professional life. And it's a shame that sometimes that changes, you know, when you're getting those opportunities.
Yeah, yeah. After you can get into every show for free or get every meal for free, it almost isn't fun anymore, I guess. Or you're not really enjoying it as much as if you make a reservation, save up your money, and go there and really enjoy it.
Especially for like food or music, you know, because those are things that like everyone does for leisure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everyone. So it's like, what happens when you make that into a career? It's just like, you just kind of have to like, you know, kind of create boundaries and also just kind of, you know, find other things to do, which is like, what else can you do that's like good, clean fun? That's not like...
Well, it seems like you haven't lost your passion for food, but you've also kind of really embraced and found a passion for writing and storytelling. And that, luckily, those aren't mutually exclusive. And it seems like what you're doing with Munchies is not only turning people on to amazing food, but also telling them amazing stories, which has got to be, you know, obviously the next level of what you wanted to do.
Feels
with
good,
your art.
Man.
Yeah.
It must be great.
Yeah, seriously, man. It is. It's just a lot harder to do.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, we don't have, like, top 48 coffee shops. Or we don't have you know, like top 5 tacos or top. We don't do any listicles. You know, we just believe in, you know, long form, medium form, genuine, good writing, and just good stories. I mean, what else can I say?
But
it's
doing
just
the Lord's
people,
work, baby.
To find people is just kind of like the issue. But it's like, you know, that's why I get up every morning. So
if you write it, they will read.
Yeah,
and I'm sure,
especially Vice.
well,
and they will comment and talk shit too. So.
Well, then it wouldn't be Vice if the comment section wasn't full of all of that.
En fuego.
Well, thanks so much for doing this, my friend. It was a pleasure. People can Google your name and check out all your stories on Vice and follow you on Twitter and Instagram. It's The Glutster.
Yes, a term that I created when I was 16.
Stick with it. It's perfect.
Just stuck with me like Steve Urkel. It was like, yeah, I took the root word of gluttony. And hipster.
Mm-hmm.
Hipster.
Perfect.
Yeah. Let it ride, baby. Well, thank you for doing this, my friend. TheStewPodcast.com has all the episodes. If you like this, subscribe on iTunes. Tell a friend who might enjoy. You can listen to the Vice Munchies podcast if you want, if you would want to do something weird like that. But you should definitely listen to this instead. Or if Vice is listening.
Stewie, RIP. You can hire. We miss you tonight.
Yeah, shout out to Stewie, my brother. He's not here. We'll see you guys next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.